Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Good evening, this is Jane Hoffman, and tonight we're going to cover two topics. We're going to cover the presidential debate, and we're also going to cover the Lebanese hostage crisis, which lasted from 1982 to 1992, and I'll get into that in a minute. I first want to start out with a quote by Marianne Williamson, who is an author running for president. If you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with the dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this President Trump is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. So what she was addressing with Anderson Cooper after the debate was that she was talking about the old days when the corporations in America took care of their own and they provided life insurance, pensions, and they weren't just worried about what the stockholders thought. And she said that when they broke away under the Reagan era, the trickle-down economics and the corporations broke away and started only pledging to the stockholders and not the people working for them. That's when the cleavage began with not caring about the average working person. So then she went into a whole mantra of how the landscape of society has to change and there has to be like a new type of revolution in our country, which is also infiltrated with love to overcome the political defaults. Now, Bernie Sanders got hot under his collar, too, when he said to Tim Ryan, who was questioning his Medicaid for All bill, Tim Ryan said to him, how do you know that eyeglasses, prescriptions, and other things are covered under Medicare for All? And Bernie Sanders said, I wrote the damn bill. So I am going to bring up some other points. We're going to start with the Democratic debate tonight, but then I have a heavy topic that I have to get into, and it's going to cover about 5 minutes. So with that, I'll bring in Wade first and then Don. Good evening, Wade. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Good evening, Jane.
Did you have a chance to watch the Democratic debate tonight?
Oh, I didn't. You know, I really should have, because I should have figured we were going to talk about it. But I was pretty busy, though. I didn't get a chance, but I do wish I had.
It's okay. Let's find out if Don listened to any of it. I think he watched part of it, he told me. Good evening, Don. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, I think. Just kind of relaxing after a couple of days of work and off and on, and things are just kind of weird because of all the things that have been going on in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was just going to let you guys know that one of the main points that commentators made about the debate is that they were trying to emphasize the more moderate candidates and their subtle attacks on Sanders and Warren, saying that these broad sweeping liberal policies are not going to be effective or be able to make major change. So first I'm going to play a clip by Stephen Bullock, the Montana governor. And I won't play the whole thing, but at least enough to get you guys the idea. That way you can get acclimated to the show. The other thing is that they put Bernie and Elizabeth Warren on the defensive. But let's just listen to one of the clips.
Montana Governor Steve Bullock started the presidential campaign late and dismissed the first Democratic primary debate. His campaign says he qualifies for the next round later. Now, at the center of the campaign is dark money. In the latest installment of Morning Edition's opening argument series, Our Policy Conversations with 2020 Candidates, Bullock says he thinks anonymous money from corporations and lobbying groups has corrupted our democratic process. And he started with an example.
Think about the first George Bush. George H.W. Bush said, we will lead on climate change and we'll lead from the top. That was 30 years ago. And now Republicans can't even acknowledge that climate change is human caused or real because of the outside spending in our elections. If we can't take care of the corrupting influence and money in our elections, everything else that the Democrats are talking about, we're going to run into the same problem.
Can I just ask what reforms you would make specifically on dark money?
Sure.
Like, what are your plans?
So day one, I'd sign an executive order that says if you want a contract with the federal government, I can't tell you you can't spend or donate, but you have to disclose every single dollar that you are either spending or donating to influence our elections.
Okay, that was Stephen Bullock, a Montana governor. Now I'm going to play this for the sake of Don. Pete Buttigieg proposes a broad plan to counter racial inequality.
The campaign was waylaid by a police shooting in South Bend, Indiana, where he is in his second term. A white police officer, and many residents there blamed the mayor for not addressing racial divides in the city. And overall, Buttigieg has had a hard time getting traction with black voters. He is now trying to fix that with a new plan out today, named after Frederick Douglass. It calls for a new Voting Rights Act and massive investments in education, health, and home ownership. In an exclusive conversation, Pete Buttigieg says the proposal is as ambitious as the Marshall Plan.
America basically rebuilt Europe after World War II. And what we need to do an investment of comparable ambition right here at home. Because what we've learned is that the inequities that we have in our country were put in intentionally by generations, sometimes centuries of racist policy. They're not going to go away just because you replace a racist system with a neutral one. We need to intentionally invest in health, in home ownership, in entrepreneurship, in access to democracy. If we don't do these things, we shouldn't be surprised that racial inequality persists, because inequalities compound, just like a dollar saved. A dollar stolen also compounds.
So I'm not gonna play more than two people, because it's gonna take away from the essence of the show. But basically, I want to know. We have Albert and John Yoder on the line. I did want to point out one fact. Thank you for calling in, John and Albert. I'll pull you in a minute. Basically, I only saw the second half of the debate when they were talking about nuclear proliferation and agreements between international communities, because I think like a 50-year policy on nuclear proliferation and containment is going to be over on Friday in the international community. So it was a hot topic. So they were talking about what the broad approach was regarding nuclear disarmament. And Amy Klobuchar brought up the Marshall Plan and some of the Truman plans of the past. But basically, I did like what these two people that I just played said, because Buttigieg was focusing on racial, like, you know, scaling, taking off the scabs of our society from inequities. And then the Montana governor was talking about the dark money that rules campaigns and eventually funds corrupt policies. So, Don or Wade, do you have a comment on that before I bring the other two hosts in?
Yeah, go ahead, Wade, because I've got too much to say.
Just trying to process the question. Go ahead.
Okay, the question was, is I played two clips by two candidates, one of the governors from Montana who was discussing dark money, and the other one was Pete Buttigieg talking about how to remove racism in our country as compared to how Europe rebuilt itself after World War II, like removing those unnecessary safeguards to protect certain members of society. Were you listening?
Yeah, I was. Again, it's like, you know, they keep saying, we need to do this, we need to do that. Well, you need to stop doing the things that get in people's way. You need to stop preventing people. Reenact the Homestead Act. That was an abomination, ending that under Carter, I believe. So he should be one of the most shamed presidents in history for ending Homestead
Act. What was the Homestead Act?
Well, it was an act that just declares what's a human right anyway, is to use unoccupied, unused land. Nobody's there, then you get to use it as an individual, right? And so they ended that in 1976. So, you know, so if you want to worry about people's rights and the power of corporations and stuff, well, you know, start thinking about the things that we don't allow individuals to do, all the regulations, the red tape that we put on them that prevent them from just being able to do normal things like grow food and sell things and things like that.
Now that you said that, I'm going to repeat one thing I said for John and Albert. John and Albert, you're not on the line yet. You will be shortly. Marianne Williamson said, if you think the wonkiness of this country is going to deal with the if you think any of this wonkiness, and she's talking about policy formation, is going to deal with the dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that President Trump is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see dark days. And what she meant is not confronting the forces of corporations that have been dominant in suppressing the working class person. And she was also talking about how the comparison between corporations of the past that looked after their own, like 3M did for my father, and how nowadays they're only beholden to the stockholders. So with that, I'll pull in the other two hosts because we may not get to the second topic tonight. Good evening, John.
Hello, Jane.
You've been AWOL all day. Were you with your brother?
How's Vanessa from the block?
You were up in the block? By the way, your phone was cutting out at first.
I said, how are you doing, Janessa from the block?
I'm blockheaded tonight. I haven't decided. Here's Albert. Good evening, Albert. How's your day going? Okay, Albert's on standby. So, John, why don't you put your two cents in for the political debate that was aired on one of the major networks tonight? I think it was MSNBC or CBS.
Well, I thought there was a couple interesting points, how they're putting together a plan to end racism. Hold on a second. Give me a second. So they have a plan to end racism. That's pretty good. I'm wondering how they're going to outlaw racism. The other thing is, they said they're going to invest into people being able to, basically, when they say invest, it usually means tax. So I'm wondering with our economy, how it's going to affect our economy if we are poor and they're going to take our tax money to pay to get us rich. I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, when it was Pete Buttigieg, he thinks that sinking more money into schools is going to solve the problem, but that single-handedly cannot solve the inequity in our society. But Marianne Williamson also brought up that when kids come to school hungry and they ask their teacher for food. Now, up here in Superior, Wisconsin, we have a breakfast program, an afternoon program with food, plus they have a summer free lunch program. So a
lot of
these
things.
Some
of the worst food.
Well,
in the world.
At least it's food.
A lot of parents don't feed their kids. You're not getting. I own a fitness and nutrition business. There, the two points that you're missing, John just touched on it. I've been saying all along, all my life, is racism is real, and it's what's divided our country. And the second thing is nutrition. We don't have people because they're zombies because they have nothing in their bodies. They have nothing nutritious in their brain. That's why I'm against the computers and the internet, because you get stupid people, stupid weapons, and they think they're smart enough to use them. The same thing as guns. If these people are just, they have IQs of 10, and they expect the rest of the population expect them to be responsible with those weapons.
Well, their IQ is high enough to order. Their IQ is high enough to order weapons online and then shoot people
right.
at a garlic festival.
Well, that's because everybody has everybody is prejudiced. All these folks are prejudiced in some way or another. Everyone is biased. Every single person has a bias.
Okay, but just don't water down with the whole topic tonight with
the
sweeping generalization.
The whole topic was about reparations and what we're going to do.
No, we're not talking about reparations. We're talking about
that was part of the
presidential debate.
It was part of the debate. John touched on the racism. how are we going to solve it? We can't solve it because it's too prevalent. It's too ingrained, and it's nutritionally based. It's not based on.
So are you going to cut up carrots for all the hungry kids in your neighborhood?
I just cut up some carrots. I'm making a pitcher full of smoothies right now for the rest of the week, and that's going to be my main sustenance for breakfast every day, which is always.
And how about the hungry kids in your neighborhood that you don't approve of the public school's free lunch program during the summer when there's no school?
I live in a middle to upper middle class neighborhood. So I don't have to worry about hungry kids in my neighborhood. But, and that was what they, I told you that to look at Williamson. She has some excellent things to say. And I mentioned that, about six programs ago. This woman is spot on some of the things that are going on. Beto O'Rourke, 100% reparations. Bernie cut it, he chopped it up, but he didn't say reparations per se. So if you listen, but you don't listen, so I better shut up. All right.
You know what? I am, Don, guess what? If you say one more derogatory thing, you're off the air tonight. So right now I'm going to mute you for a couple seconds. I don't need to be insulted on my show. Okay, so it's not about me listening. It's not a joke, and you don't know everything.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Albert, why don't you go, and then I'm going to change topics.
Oh, no, I'm good on that topic. I didn't really hear some of the topic. But go ahead, change it.
It's the presidential debate, Albert. Did you watch any of it?
Oh, no. I watch the 2016 presidential debate, and after that, I pretty much had enough of that. I'm not even stoked up.
Okay, well, it was on tonight, Albert. There were 10 candidates.
Which one, the Republicans or the Democrats?
The Democrats. We already have a Republican as president. They don't have debates for that because he's the standing president. So he doesn't need to compete with anybody.
Well, they had a debate when Barack Obama was president, they still had Democrats debating like Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and whatnot.
Well, let's just skip over that now. Don, you're back on the air. And by the way, your daughter and your wife run the fitness center. You don't. So if you're going to continue to insult me, I'll insult you right back.
It's my name on the fitness center, honey.
Okay, well, you know what? I want to bring up a point. I'm not going to attack you anymore, but please don't attack me. Marianne Williamson also said that she go.
I didn't attack you. I didn't attack you.
Yes, you did.
You
said I don't know anything.
People who don't listen. I didn't mean you.
Well, you know what? Your ignorant black ass hasn't paid money for this show. Like you promised for 6 months.
Right.
So go ahead and talk your bullshit. Okay, now we're changing. John.
There we go.
John, do you have anything more to say about the debate, John? Because otherwise I'm changing the topic.
I like this debate. I just hope you don't silence my black brother. I don't want to
just castrate him.
That's the Minnesota privilege class, John.
We spent a couple hundred years trying to liberate you. Now James is going to mute you.
You're damn straight.
I know that is. But you heard about
this
reparations.
This is the Bernie Sanders Socialist Network.
Marianne said it.
Movie 1984.
Marianne said it. Though she said, or Beto said it. He said that after all those years, we gave 40 acres of mule and took them, so we need to give them reparations for that. You know, so we got reparations on top of reparations coming, and that's what we want, and we're going to fight until we get it.
You know how I view reparations? This is how I view reparations. And by the way, I want to quote Marianne Williamson first before I get into my statement. She said that Flint, Michigan would have never happened in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, where she grew up, where she raised her daughter in an affluent part of Detroit. So she was touching upon not only racial inequity, but environmental inequity. But my viewpoint, this is my viewpoint on reparations. We're all born into this world. Some of us are born with progressive illnesses, like maybe you have a hereditary disease like psoriasis. People in Syria were born under a ruthless leader. People in America, we've gone through our trials. We have trials every day that we have to suffer and conquer. There's no government that should be responsible for redeeming us. If you're born black and you were treated like shit, I'm sorry, but the government can't go back 400 years and pay for your ailments. Every person on this earth suffers, and the government is not some kind of publisher's clearinghouse place to redeem everybody from all their sufferings. And that's what I think about it.
Wow, you're sounding more and more red-pilled. Nice.
Yep, she sounds real privileged and Minnesota privileged.
if people are going to get reparations, why not Europe getting reparations from Turkey because of the Ottoman Empire, or Spain getting reparations from Morocco, or, you know, like, people should get reparations from Rome for... you know, I don't know. Like, how far back do you go?
Yeah, well, all I know is, what about the Chinese and the Japanese? I think Jane hates them, too.
I'm just in a bad...
Well, the Japanese...
I'm in a bad... I'm kind of in a bad mood, if you haven't noticed. Okay, I'm going to point out... I'm not against anybody. I'm just tired of people spouting off. But I liked Wade's comment about Turkey. Now, here's what I meant on overall is that we are all born under some type of government system. And Jesus had a death wish on his body before he even came out of Mary's womb. King Herod wanted to ice him. And they had to keep moving around.
Quick question.
So nobody was born in a perfect situation.
Quick question,
what?
Was the presidential debate yesterday?
No, it was tonight from 7 to 10, around 7 to 9 p.m.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But anyways, all I'm trying to say is that everybody has a burden, and life isn't fair. And that's one of the first things you have to learn about life. And then you can get 3 or 4 college degrees and end up in a job with a complete asshole boss who treats you like dirt. And then you have to suffer even more. And people, I know someone who got fired in a school district and she never even got written up. They just decided to get rid of her because a couple.
Nobody
go ahead.
Has to take that. I've never taken that. I'm a black man. Too smart for my own good. I know everything. And the bottom line is that I'm at a dead-end job because nobody will hire me because they know I'm a threat. So that's something that, that's my burden, but I'm not trying to put that burden on anyone else. I'm not trying to subjugate somebody else. That's not my goal. Mainly because I'm, being a black man, being a person of color, you know, you've got melanin and you've got the pineal gland in people of color, and that's just love and a worship, a true worship and understanding of God. White people don't have
those
things.
That's okay. Like,
they're struggling.
That's a legitimate argument.
Well, they're struggling. White people are struggling to be humans because they don't have those
disadvantaged.
Formal, they're
so
disadvantaged.
You should care that we're disadvantaged. Yeah,
I
so,
do.
Like, we should be the ones.
That's,
all right, thank you. I mean,
that's the whole point.
Then we're handicapped.
Is that we people of color understand that. That's why we give white people the license to do the things they do. And that plus they come behind it with guns and knives and bombs and everything else. But, you know, they're talking about Afghanistan. We've been there in the next year. We're going to have people who are kids who have always lived with an Afghan or Iraqi war. Now we're going to bring up adults who have only encountered or understood war. That's ridiculous. I forgot who brought it up, but they were talking about that. The fact that we always are at war, and that I think Bernie did.
Okay, I do want to bring up a point Pete Buttigieg said, Don. He said that if he was in office, he would evacuate Afghanistan. He said there's no reason why we should be there at all. Now, one other opponent on the stage said that we need to keep a small remnant of the military there just to maintain what we've already accomplished.
I think Hickenlooper and the other one said something.
Tim Ryan?
I don't know if it was Ryan. I think it was the guy started with a B. I forgot his name. But anyway, I think that they both came back and said we can't pull fully out because of the vacuum that it would
right.
Occur.
I think it might have been Tim Ryan, but John, before I switch into my next topic, why don't you comment about everything that's been discussed the last 10 minutes?
Well, that's an interesting point regarding reparations. The question would be with reparations, someone has to say, well, here's the debt, so you got to get someone to figure out how much. It's kind of like someone saying, I want to buy a house. You go, okay, how much does it cost? I don't know. Well, that kind of affects how much money I have. So we got to figure that out. Can we agree? And the second thing is, say you're a white person, and someone comes up to you and gives you a bill and says, you owe a black person this amount. Are they going to say, that sounds good, I'll just give it to them? Now, some white people will say, I'm privileged, I feel guilty, Beto will probably pay it, maybe Bernie. No, Bernie, he'll get out of it.
Delaney said he would. He's a rich person, he would increase his taxes gladly.
But see, half the country's going to go over my dead body. Like, I don't want this. So it'll be down to, well, I have one politician who wants me to pay $60,000, bill or $30,000 bill. Another politician says, you don't have to pay this. You don't owe it. Like, this is America. You're free. Like, you're not guilty for other people's actions. In fact, you're not guaranteed anything, just the freedom to the pursuit of happiness and, you know, that mm-hmm. the American dream. You're not guaranteed housing, water, food. You're not guaranteed anything. Nothing.
John,
just
the
freedom.
The thing is, the reason for reparations is because black people never got that. They never They never got a chance for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Black people never got the chance. They're in jail.
Don, what was your slave owner's name? And what plantation did you grow up on?
I was just talking about that. My grandfather, I don't know where he came from because he was adopted. And you don't find many black Gallimores around. So that means that he was in a unique situation. If my name was Mbubu Ngadba, I'd be fine with it. But I'm done, you know, and then I just have to live with that crap. But why do you think black folks name their kids the way they name them?
Is there a statute of limitations?
What?
What's the statute of limitations on this?
Oh, on what?
on your freedom. Apparently you were born a black slave. You had a black, you had a white landowner that whipped you every day. So what was his name?
Right.
I'd like to know it.
I don't know. Call Willie Lynch.
And they hung your dad, right? They hung your brother and sister. They raped your wife, right? They did that, right?
Probably raped me too.
And they raped you. I got it. Okay. Well, they raped me too.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, John. I don't understand why you're in their camp, so to speak, because what they did to your Hispanic family was probably almost as bad as some of the things that were done to other minorities.
Well, that was many years ago. No one's owned me. You know, I mean, I've had discrimination.
No,
white people,
but that's
say things about me and behind my back.
Well, right now, half of your people, you know, not half of your people, but a lot of your people are being chopped off, are being halved. They're enslaved in camp.
You know,
they're
internment
camps right now at the border.
I had my uncle on the other side, the Mexican side, who took me aside when I was 7 or 8 with my brother and started telling me what a half-breed was, because my dad was white, my mom was Mexican. And he's telling me, you're a güero. You know, it's kind of like when you take a coyote and you take a dog and they get together and they have this big...
A güero.
And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm 7 years old. And my, this is like reverse. This isn't the white man. This is the brown man telling the half-white, half-brown kid that he's a half-breed. And it's like, really? I thought we were all this one, you know, one family under God. The point of what I'm saying is we're free. That just to pursue the dream. We're not guaranteed.
Nobody's
non-discrimination.
Free,
people can be racist.
Nope. Nobody's free.
John,
nobody's free. Nobody's free.
Did you know in the Liberian family that Lauren's a part of, Lauren's half sister, they don't allow his sister who was killed, they don't allow us to say it was a half sister. Like, she's our blood.
Mm.
So you don't say things like half sister or half relations. Like, they're fully part of the family, so you just don't say things like that. They accept you as a whole, as part of the family.
I think
whether
John
I was married to his dad or not.
Don should be free to sue whoever was his slave owner and get reparations for whatever they stole, his property, his land, his children. Yeah, go ahead and sue him. But, if you know, that should be his claim. But if he hasn't been those... If he hasn't suffered that, then I don't know. You're trying to sue for someone else that's not you. It's the problem. If you can get what I mean. It's like, how
no.
do you
The
do
other
it?
Thing, Don, is you
no,
live
you
better
you
than
don't
three
quarters.
Don, you live better than three quarters of the world. Over two-thirds of the world go to bed hungry tonight. They're susceptible to diseases. They don't have accessible hospitals.
I live better
so you're
than
not
85%.
Suffering.
I live better than 85% of the world. I was just talking to Pat about that. We live very well. Always have. I've never been to bed hungry. I've never had a problem. I've never been without money ever in my
life. Because of the white man.
Because of the white man.
Part of it was because his wife had a good job.
My mother had a good job. My father had a good job. We all, my in-laws, my uncles and aunts were all police or professors. They've been professors or preachers and pastors since the 1860s. So I've grown up far beyond what my brother.
And they're definitely rich off other people's money.
Yeah, well, the thing is, though. The thing is, though, is that I don't want to see those people who don't have what I have being stepped on, and that's what's happened. I don't want to see other people who don't have what I had being completely stepped on and killed, and that's what happened. That's what happened, and when you give somebody 40 acres and a mule and then you trick them out of it, or if the people are here from, you know, Mexicans are here, all them for centuries, and then you come in and give them treaties and then take them away and kill them, and then you got Indians who are here for beyond centuries, and you give them a little plot of land and say, oh, this is a reservation. You should be happy. You're a sovereign country in your country. That's ridiculous. I would never want to sit back and let anybody take that, ever.
Some points you're making are valid. Each black male head of the household was promised 40 acres and a mule. Now, I do want to make a point, though.
They were given it. They were given. They actually had.
But it wasn't administered righteously.
Right, exactly. It was taken away because they were charging more than they were planting or getting from the land, so they just took it back away unnecessarily because they were actually producing enough to cover the cost, but the cost kept increasing unnecessarily. It was artificial, just like tarp. I've told you, I've mentioned this on the show many times. We've had four tarps. Zero of that money went into the inner cities. Zero. Four tarps. We're talking about $800 billion each plus. So we're looking at $3 trillion of money that went to the white man, and none went into the inner cities.
I actually looked up the tarp after you talked about it, looked up at the breakdown, and actually billions were spent into government programs and housing programs, a lot of it went out to the people, or was stolen.
No, it was stolen. They've got huge amounts of money that have been unaccounted for, and they haven't even looked for it. And the banks,
we should then find out
all of the auto companies, the banks, they paid all of theirs back. So if you pay back what you were given, they were told to spend it. If you give all that money back, that means that full $3.2 trillion is up in the air somewhere, and the black man didn't get a damn penny of it, even though you say there are programs. Yeah. The programs were administered by whom? It wasn't a black man.
Well, I think if you looked up the allocation on it, you'll see that it was designated for minorities and minority programs that benefit minorities, whether Social Security, Medicaid, housing in inner city. Now, it doesn't mean it got there. Doesn't mean it got there, but that's what it was written up for.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're saying the government's corrupt. I mean, a lot of us know that. So
did you see what happened to Camp Crimson? What have I been saying, Wade, about the drugs and the women and the sex trade? You saw what happened in Camp Pendleton, right?
Well, you've just been talking about it going on and. People in power are corrupt, and
you know what I'm talking about.
Go on,
Camp Pendleton.
I think a Camp Pendleton. What was the specifics about?
The 16 soldiers got arrested for smuggling people across the border, and that's just a small amount. This has been going on for years. I've mentioned many times. Our military is the most corrupt organization in the world. And these drugs, we don't have poppy seeds and coca plants in the middle of our neighborhoods. It comes from somewhere, and you can't fit billions of dollars of drugs in a suitcase. So it has to come from someplace, and it's coming from the military.
Hey, Don and John and Wade and Albert, you know what my second topic was tonight that I'm going to postpone to do by myself tomorrow night? It was about the Lebanese hostage crisis, where 104 foreign hostages were taken by different terrorist organizations tied to Iran and the Hezbollah. Well, anyways, guess what one of the French president candidates did during that time? The French government, Francois Mitterrand, offered the Iranians, like, $100 million, and I'm not kidding you, to release like 15 French hostages. Well, apparently Jacques Chirac, who ran against him that year in the presidential race in 1988, offered the Hezbollah and the Iranians more money to hold the hostages there until after the election. So therefore, these French people were suffering as hostages, but this Jacques Chirac guy didn't care. He gave money to the Iranians to keep them longer so he would look better and win the election, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's similar to what Don's talking about with Marines smuggling people across the border. Like, sometimes people become political pawns.
Sounds like he was a
You're not a pawn when you're in the car with, you know, six illegal aliens driving across the border. That's not a pawn. That means you're greedy, you're criminal, and you're making money. That's what that means.
Well, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, well, I'm not going to go into the story tonight, but I was reading stories about all these people who were killed or escaped or were rescued, and one guy was in the middle of Beirut, and he just jumped out of the car and he got away. So some of these hostages weren't very proficient, but I'm going to save that for another episode. Mm-hmm. It might be one that I just do by myself. Yeah, go ahead, Wade.
Oh, no, I'm listening. I said, wow. Yeah, I mean, we can all agree on government. How about instead of, like, why doesn't the government do this, why don't they do that, how about, you know, why don't they get out of people's lives, so because then we can do it a lot more easily. There's so much we can do if they stop preventing us from doing it.
Because it's like the unions got started. Wait. People can't be trusted. I wouldn't trust a white man to spit as far as I can spit. I really wouldn't.
Okay,
well, really,
Don, can you stop being
in,
can you make your point without always being divisive? By the way, Bernie
Sanders. I'm not
Sanders
divisive.
Said,
I'm telling the truth. This is
okay,
not
well,
divisive.
You made a good point because Bernie Sanders said tonight that there was a question that came up, and he said that out of all the people on the stage, he's most aligned with the unions because a lot of the battles have had to be fought through the unions. I guess he was kind of talking about fair wages and protection of
the
workplace.
But it came up a couple of times. It's about greed of man. It came up three or four times. About how
he is greedy
and he overcomes his belief in God. Jane, greed with people, especially a lot of white men, green money is their God. They don't have a God. Or they just say they have a God, but they don't really believe. It's money. It's all about the money. And that's what came up three times at least in this debate.
Okay.
I have a question for John. John, are you there still?
Oh yeah, well,
John.
The problem. Yes, I'm here.
No, John, I have a question. Wait, John, I have a question for you. Marianne Williamson was on. She had an after interview after the debate, and she was talking to Anderson Cooper, and she was talking about corporate exploitation and how they only are beholden to the stockholders and they no longer protect the individual, like making sure they have life insurance and benefits. So my question to you, John, is why do you think at the center of all these debates, what was formerly might have been fringe candidates like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are now kind of like the commanders of these debates, and the other progressive leadership or the people who aren't so strong about socialist agenda are kind of like fighting for their centerpiece of attention?
Well, I think the whole party kind of got hijacked by the squad. And, you know, it's interesting because Don was talking about the white man. It's like all the benefits and the blessings of our country, if he's blaming on the white man, we're all enjoying. If he wants to go to where, I don't know, the black majority is in power or running, you go to Haiti or go to some other place, where is their lifestyle? You know, you go to Africa, go to Namibia or you know, Angola or other places. And this is what I don't understand. He's saying, you know, he's so exploited. It's like, well, actually, then go to places where the white man isn't exploiting, and you'll find terrible, terrible poverty.
Move away from white men.
It has nothing to do with, you know, white or black. It's just the governments are corrupt. But going back to the party, you know, it got hijacked by I'll marry my Bromar, Ilhan. And
I don't think it. Yeah, but Nancy Pelosi doesn't feel there. I wouldn't say hijacked because those four squad people are just getting a lot of media attention. But there's a lot of mainstream Democrats that we never hear about. They're just kind of pulling the middle weight of the party.
Yeah, but who's pushing all the proposals for impeachment and for the Green Deal? It was all AOC. It was all, you know, the squad pushing it to, and saying there's impeachment. Nancy Pelosi's been trying to cool the jets and pump the brakes because that's they would jump into it right now. They would go, if those four were in charge of the vote, they'd already be starting impeachment. Why is Nancy fighting it?
Yeah, by the way, I read in the paper today that 113 people in the House of Representatives now support impeachment.
I'd like to see him go for it. I would love it. That would pretty much end the election, to tell you the truth.
Well, you know what? You might think this is a joke, but I'm not really for impeachment, except for the only reason I would be for it is because Trump has said some outlandish things to people, including telling Iran and Afghanistan that he could wipe them off the face of the earth if he chose to. So in that case, I wouldn't mind him getting booted out of office. Maybe the word bootigig could be a new verb. He could get bootigigged out of office.
I think Trump's getting things done.
And well, you know, that's kind of a general statement. He's causing as much damage as he is good things. In your opinion,
well,
maybe in your opinion, it's all good.
When you get
he's
results,
damaging relationships. He's damaged some relations lately in the last few months. He told the Afghan top minister that if he wanted to, he could wipe them off the face of the map. Right inside his Oval Office, he said that. So anyways, you guys, I'm at work. So I think we shouldn't do the show longer than 15 more minutes. If Albert wants to step in and Don or Wade, I have to go actually, but I'm going to let John close the show out. There's a situation here at work that I got
to
handle. So who wants to, does anyone have a conclusion?
I had a point I was about. So Don is pointing.
I'm not rushing you. Go ahead.
Sure. So Don was pointing out people are greedy. And so
you're cutting out.
People are.
You're cutting out, Wade. Just so you guys know,
see,
John's in charge now. I have to go, but I'm going to let the show run. Okay, go.
If people are greedy, then it's even more greedy people to all vote on some make decisions. Are greedy, have powerful governments that greedy person in charge of.
What did you say, Wade?
Something
you're breaking
up. Don and John, you're back on the air.
Oh,
Johnny, you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Wait, people are greedy all over. It's just a matter of degrees.
Okay.
Wade, you were breaking up. Wade stopped on. Wade, can you repeat what you said? Because you were breaking up pretty bad.
Okay. Is it better? Okay, people are greedy. All getting to make choices for their own personal life. Or able to vote in people that get to control everybody. You know, I mean, what's the way to handle a greedy world?
You don't handle a greedy world. You kind of deal with it and do the best you can. But, you know, the main thing is that greed does kill. Greed causes disaster, animosity, and hate. And that's what we're dealing with on a regular basis for time immemorial. You know, this is not fun to be in a beautiful world, to be in a beautiful place, and have climate change coming over you because Ronald Reagan said that climate change was coming. And it's here, and his own party doesn't believe it. It exists. That doesn't make sense. And that's the way that the world has been run for a long, long time. So, you know, we just have to kind of suck it up, enjoy what we can, and do the best to bring about some kind of equality.
The point is it better than to have a very powerful government that greedy people get to have control over, or is it better to have minimal government so greedy people don't get to take that power over our lives?
It's better to have tribes, you know, if it comes down to a choice like that, because the greedy government, just like what's happening now, a greedy government takes over not just that region, not just that country, but can take over the world. And that's where you have a problem.
Yeah. Hey, can I step in a minute? Wade?
That's why we have states.
I want to make a point. Because the media is so magnified with the internet and being able to look things up fast and like maybe 10 million people watching the debate, Elizabeth Warren said, "I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the U.S. to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for." Now, Wade, someone like her who is fearless like Bernie and they're taking on these big issues, they're not really concerned 100% about winning. They're concerned about continuing the fight. Now, both those two people believe that only the fight of accessible medical can be delivered by the government through the public square. So in that sense, their mentality is that they need the government as a vehicle to deliver the accessible health care that everyone needs. But I think, Wade, your mindset a lot of times is that big government is bad, too much government is bad, which is often true. But in the case of these candidates that we're discussing tonight, they're relying on the government to have those equitable changes occur.
I think.
How do you feel about that?
I think their intentions may be good, but I think there's better options too. I think if you look into it, there's a lot of things that people are being prevented from doing, like growing food, collecting and cleaning their own water. There are so many things that people can do that they're prevented from doing.
But do you really think people can clean their own water with all the chemical and oxygens in the water these days? Like, You need scientists to filter those.
Right. Well, scientists can come up with ideas that can be distributed.
Well, I don't think a lot of individuals could take on that mantle of clean water, especially like in a place like Mexico. You know, like they don't have the technology that we do to upgrade certain things. Like in a big picture scenario.
Okay.
Let's say you want to open your new clean drinking water bottle factory. How are you going to ensure that the water that you're bottling is going to be clean? I mean, it seems far-fetched what you're saying.
Okay, well, individuals don't know how to build solar panels, right? You get scientists and big companies that create these things, but then they can be sold and the prices can go down. Individuals can buy solar panels and put them in their homes. The same solution, you know, the scientists create the water filtration systems, and then the individuals, hopefully they can get them down to a price where someone can have it in their home.
But people can build solar panels by themselves.
And they can.
It's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
All right. Even better.
Okay. Do you guys want to end the show now, or do you want John to end it?
You had a couple interesting points, Jay. One is the government isn't the game. The government is like referees. They're the minimally supervised. So when you start saying the government needs to clean this up, clean that up, they're not into the water cleaning industry. They don't create stuff like that. They have to have their own water company. It's the independent American who comes up with these things. These governments are all corrupt.
I understand that, John, but John, my point with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders is that the government is the vehicle to ensure the equitable product, whether it's free medicine or whatever, or good education.
The worst pollution in the world is in China and India, and also in Russia. Remember when we had the nuclear plant that melted down Chernobyl? Their governments are totally in charge of things. That was the worst corruption, right? They covered that all up. So we have the government in control. They're just going to melt you.
I understand what you're saying, but you missed my point. The only thing I was trying to say, Wade was saying, like, why can't we make our own food and clean our own water? I'm just looking at it from the perspective of a biologist. Like, I don't think, let's say, Betty Lou, who lives in Farmville, Minnesota, is going to have the wherewithal and the techniques to clean her own water in this day and age.
The government doesn't have its own water bottling plant or desalination plant. Those are independent contractors with the government. The government isn't there to start all these different businesses like Coca-Cola and Starbucks.
I was just talking about the technological standpoint of making clean water. I wasn't bringing up the government.
The government brings guidelines or regulations. And that's what we vote on, what people we want in there to set those standards. If we don't like the people that are in there, we vote them out to someone who promises better regulations. So here's the thing we talked about earlier. You mentioned how Trump has damaged relationships. I find he's straightening out relationships. He's actually telling people, setting boundaries for them. I don't mind if he tells someone to back off.
Just because of you, I have a question about you. Every time we get on this show, you always have to be a cheerleader for him.
I'm a cheerleader for.
Okay, well, in reality, he's doing some good things and some bad things, but not all of us are covering different aspects of the news. And he has said some damaging things to world leaders.
And that's all you care about is the feelings of terrorists. People who will blow up our planet.
No, like even the mayor, even the mayor of London that just got his prime minister position, the only thing Trump could say about him is that the new mayor of London, the only thing Trump could say about him is, I like him, he makes good decisions, and I think he likes me. Like, it's all in relationship, but on his own ego stroking.
And that's a problem for him?
Do you think he really understands what that guy is all about?
I think he has a much bigger picture of how the world operates. He's been doing it for 50 or 60 years. He knows how to make money and be successful, and that's what we need. None of these people know how to run a business. They don't know how to manage things or how to take care of money. They spend money. They're terrible at it. And so,
well,
we
just had a second quarter slowdown in our economy. The worst quarter slowdown in the last couple years.
Well, actually, if you look, we've also, he hasn't had zero interest rates. They had zero interest rates for 8 years under Obama. They've been trying to slow down his economy. But our economy is way above everyone else. He's had over 3% growth every quarter. Obama never had that. Just didn't. So,
yeah, you guys, I have to let you guys close the show, and I have to handle a problem. So I'll let you guys close the show.
Thanks, Jane.
Good night, you guys. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Have a good night. Huh?
Yeah. So how long do we have?
How long do you want to go?
I have a question. That presidential debate, what was it, like 2 hours ago?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was wondering. It was 6 hours ago.
Welcome to the world, Albert.
We're all terrible. So many of us haven't seen the debate. Oh, well. I'll try to be more prepared next time.
That's all right. We're all kind of, we've got so many topics that we go on when we do the show that it's not that, you know, we don't always have, all of us have specialties. So, we're right now trying to figure out something that just went on, and we can't expect everybody to be in the same place. So it's all right, Albert. You're just fine.
Well, Jane was just concerned about she feels there's this big economic slowdown. Now, all the candidates here, what do they have to promise to keep things going forward? They seem to be wanting taxes, regulations, plans, for money for education, reparations. We're talking $90 trillion of bennies on an economy that only makes $20 trillion a year. What was the
right
plan?
But you forget that those bennies come back in the form of the taxes, increased livestock quality of life, which it helps everyone, and most of those 90 trillion will come back into the economy. That's what people don't realize. If you give reparations, $800 billion in reparations, probably $600 billion is going to come back into the economy in some form or another. And the other $200 billion, of course, will be stolen by the white man. But anyway, but the bottom line is that those monies come back into the economy in some way or another.
You're saying if I have $20 and I give you $90, but I only have $20, that then all the $90 is going to come back to me. But I don't have the $90. I only have $20.
Yeah.
I have $20. That's just the gross.
But
our budget is $4 trillion.
Think about when Barack Obama bailed out the banks with our tax dollars. So the banks made more money. And they got over greedy and over cocky, spending all that money, and they screwed themselves up, and then they got bailed by our tax dollars. So making more money, businesses making more money doesn't mean they're going to provide more jobs and, you know, and be better for the economy. Actually, you know, sometimes when they make more money,
no.
It goes, and they end up...
Well, that's what we were talking about. Those greedy people took the tax money, the tax reform money, 67% of the corporations said that they were going to do stock buybacks. That has nothing to do with raising the economy. That has nothing to do with increasing scale. That only has to do with putting artificial caps or artificial funding into Wall Street and the books. That's all.
The automotive industry has been making more money, but they're producing less jobs per year because they're using more automation. Also, too, there's other companies
right.
that are more getting into automation. They are making more money. I mean, look at Amazon or Google, and you know.
But they don't pay taxes. They don't pay
Netflix.
Taxes either.
Even Netflix, Netflix provides a whole lot less jobs, but they make more money. You know what I mean? So making more money is not providing more jobs and really
right.
helping people.
Yeah.
How about we stop counting on the government to give people things and we not have taxes? That way we're not worried about what they're taking money and doing what. No, we just keep what we earn.
Well, that would be great, but if you stop paying your taxes, you can go to jail.
No, I mean if we stop having those rules.
The
government money is our money. So when
yeah.
someone
and
says
the rules,
we need government money, that means we need my money.
Well, technically you have to pay the taxes right now, or else you know the IRS will come after you and you go to jail. And all that bad
wait,
stuff. Literally, like if you decide not to pay your taxes, they'll bust down your door and take you out by pulling you, and throw you in the back of a squad.
The main thing about the American democracy or rules is that they're made to be broken. That saying is so true. That's why we have a legal system that's so fat. It's unreal.
Yeah.
These guys.
Well, I think a rule that's meant to be broken shouldn't be a rule. But a lot of that is true.
If you go back to the Dark Ages, to the medieval, you know, back in the castle age, king and queen, and the peasants had to pay the taxes. You know, they didn't pay the taxes. They come over, they grab them and put them and throw them in the dungeon. It's kind of the same thing now, you know.
Well, that's what we have now, right? I mean, it's like, you know, I say let's let people, you got your property, allow homesteading again. You get your property and you get to do what you want. Imagine if everybody worked from home.
Here's another thing. I can also relate other stuff from medieval times. Back in the days, you know, during those days, right? They said, a god required that you fight this war and do this. And do that. And God required that I be the king and blah, 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 and the queen, you know. And now you have presidential candidates, like three of them from the Republican side saying that they God told them to run for president, you know. God bless America, blah, 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 you know. It's even and it's all that. And you know what I mean? And we go and we fight and we go to other countries to kill people. So obviously our government believes in God. And our government believes in God, but yet they're pro war really hard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the history of letting the bossy people take over. And they're still doing it.
You could have a government under Satan and kill people, or you could have a government under no God, like China
yep.
or Russia, and they kill millions more. Millions
And they
more.
Killed way more people, yeah.
Because when you don't
God,
believe in God, there's...
Bit.
Yeah, once you determine there's no God, then you become your own God. And that's even worse. When you believe in a God, you have to come back to your conscience at some point and say, I have to justify right and wrong. And things get, you know, go to court. Things go through the public debate. When you take out the morality, basically you become your own God, and we're just animals. And so as bad as we may think it is under a God system or a nation that believes in God, just go to one that doesn't believe in God, and it's way worse, way worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
No. Most wars are fought under some kind of belief of God. In fact, the holy wars. There's more. There's more killing because of this. You know, this God or that God or my God and your God.
Statistically, actually, no.
More killing because of that.
The highest death toll, the biggest killers in all of history were Stalin and Mao. I think it's a mistake of causality and, I don't know, what's the term? We're mistaking cause and effect here, because what happens is people who want to control other people are people who will also use their power to kill and be destructive and go to war. And another thing that a lot of those people do is to try to cement their power, claim to be put there by God. So, but there's tons of other people that claim God that are from a belief of in God or feeding poor and doing mission work. So, I think it's not the cause and effect can get mixed up, I think.
Well, you raise a good point, because if you live in a country, it doesn't matter what you believe in, another country at some point will invade you. That's just the nature of the jungle. It's the nature of life. That's the history of the world. Other countries, other people are not social, or they're greedy, or they're jealous, and they will want to take what you have. It's just the way people are. So when someone attacks you, you can say, hey, I'm standing up for myself. You can also say, I believe God placed me on this planet and I have my right to defend myself, and therefore I will fight, honoring the name of that God to protect me. And that's your faith or your belief system. If you don't believe that, then basically you just believe in yourself. So the point is, it's a higher power. So the question, is it the faith in God that makes you kill, or is it just your greediness and your selfishness, or is it even your self-preservation? You have a wife and kids, and someone wants to attack it. And so going to your point, Alfred, if someone right now, you've got a gun, someone walks into your house, and they want to rape your family and kill you, and you stand up against it, do you feel that it's okay to stand up in the name that God's given you the freedom to defend yourself? Is that okay, or is that a bad thing?
The Bible says turn the other cheek.
It says that if you're a bad person, you're going to go to hell and burn for all eternity. But God loves you. Yeah. And you look at every religion, and somehow it seems like God's really bad with math, because every religion, they're always asking for money. You know, give us money for our church and stuff like that, and yet they pay no taxes, none of that. It's like the biggest BS ever. It's like it's terrible.
It is. And that's why the priests and your preachers and your fathers, they're the greediest people, some of the greediest people of all, because they know they can start up a church, don't have to pay taxes, get the tithes, and then people will give them money under the auspices of the fact that they are supposed to be the spiritual leaders. These people aren't spiritual leaders. They're crooks. Your pastors, your priests, your fathers, they're all crooks. And then you top that off with the fact that they're rapists and pedophiles. That makes religion the worst thing in the world.
Well, I would still support churches not paying taxes. They shouldn't be taxing people. your income. It shouldn't be taxing the churches. I think we need churches. If you want communities without churches, go to the hood and go hang out where there's just gangs running around. You know, the thing is, I never worried about.
Do you know
that,
John? The hood has more churches per block than any place in the world in history. There are three churches.
And you know what?
You go to any inner city, you will see three churches per block. You'll see two bars right next to them, but you'll see three churches per block.
I never was ever scared of a group of kids leaving a church late at night, ever. It's in the hood.
Right, but then you
see someone leaving a party or a liquor store or a corner store with the hooker and
the
pimp.
The kids are scared of you. Dylan Roof. Dylan Roof went in there and he walked into the church and everybody's looking at him, offering him prayer and food and everything else, and he just shoots them down. And that's the typical. That's what should be the fear of most people. It's not the kids and the gangs running around on the block. It's the people who are walking in innocuously and they're not afraid or a threat, perceived as a threat or a threat. And then next thing you know, the gang members are being shot up, or the real gangs are the police. They send the police in, and the police take innocent people out that they think they're gangs, and they take them out.
So in every community, we need more gangs and MS-13 than churches. That's what you say. Like when there's a disaster in Haiti or other places, we send missionary groups and church groups to donate.
But in most places, MS-13 is
about 1,000 people a year. And if you look at Germany, where Hitler came from, the police kill about a dozen people a year. So in other countries, you have police, killing people like maybe, 5 or 10 people a year. Right? In the United States, the police kill like 1,000 people every year. That's about the average number. It's when it comes to police killing people, other countries have way better numbers. Why is the United States so bad?
But John, the police is MS-13. That's what you don't get. They're way worse than MS-13.
So we need to get rid of the police and have MS-13 run things.
That's not a bad idea. At least we should try it. but they call them the mafia. They've had the police, the MS-13 around for 150 years. They call them the mafia.
Yeah, and just
look
at this. The stuff that, in Baltimore, right? The black guy that died in Baltimore, and the other guy who recorded it, he's been harassed by police and arrested. And there's in every case where, and almost in every case where a guy records another guy, being killed by the police, and then they get caught, that guy has been prosecuted by the police and harassed.
Right.
I mean, look at Freddie Gregg, the guy who recorded Freddie Gregg. He's in jail right now.
Right. The Chicago policeman, this is epidemic. The police shooting people, especially black kids. That's an epidemic, John, and it's way worse than some things that some of the gangs, especially lately, that violence is crime has gone down. Some of these gangs aren't as strong as they used to be, but the police are just as strong as ever.
I see.
Because
you
tax money.
I think
you guys, Pete Buttigieg brought up Laquan McDonald's death in the first presidential debate about a month ago.
And that was murder. That was straight up murder.
It was. They shot him point blank.
Well, that's why you have laws. If they break the law, you arrest them. If they're dirty cops, you arrest them. But I like living in my condo. I like having police protect my neighborhood. And I like going to my church and where they talk about Jesus and love, and they donate food every Wednesday, and they go to Mexico, and they give blankets and things to the homeless people of Mexico, not the illegal immigrants.
And you know what? It's molesting the kids in the caravan.
Well, I haven't been molested by my pastor, you know. So, you know, if that's been your experience, I feel bad for you. But you know, the point is you have to build up. You have to offer something better. You can't just say everything's bad. So again, no police. Let's get the gangs. Really, I mean, what is going to be the answer to that? You know, I mean, basically, if people commit crimes, you enforce the law.
The corrupted law is built to take minorities, people of color, you know, and punish them. You know, of course, more black people get arrested for drug offenses than white people, you know, And then look at the property. The police routines are routines to drive around in special property areas rather than, you know, the Witch and Wealthy side, you know. And when I did a ride-along right here in my hometown. I did a ride-along, and the cop took me and he did his routine drive around in all the poor areas and didn't go anywhere near the, you know, the wealthy side of the neighborhood. Didn't even get close to that. No. So they literally, I mean, if you live in a poor area and you're out smoking some weed, like smoking some crack or something, you're more to get caught. But if you live in Beverly Hills and the Hiltons and you're smoking some crack, doing some crack outside, you're less likely to get caught. Police don't bother those areas, you know. And you look at this, okay? Because in public schools, police have to be there. Police are in public schools. So if your kid that's going to public school gets caught with drugs, they're going to call the police that's already there. They're going to call them to come in, and that child's going to be arrested, and then your parents are going to be called. Now take a look at this. In private schools, these are privately funded, privately paid schools. So the, you know, upper class, right? But when they get caught doing drugs, they're like, no, put that away, you know, that's, you shouldn't do that. They just take it away, you know. They don't necessarily call the police on those occasions. And, you know, and that happens very often.
Albert, I heard some on the news today in Kentucky. They're putting kids in jail for just missing school for truancy. And for lighter crimes, like not being home by 10 p.m. curfew. And there was going to be a debate on the radio about how strict they should be with teenagers.
Yep, there we go. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I saw a video about policing.
I work with people every day, and I bicycle through the streets of L.A., and I go through Venice, I go through areas overpasses where there's homeless people. It doesn't matter if you're black or white, you know, there's people pooping in the street and there's people mumbling to themselves, doesn't matter what color they are. And people that have money and that are well behaved, I haven't had any problems with them. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't, you know, they can't be belligerent, doesn't mean they can't have an attitude. But I'm just saying they're not threatening my life. You're not running out and jumping out and, you know, they got
all these people who are shooting up these concerts and these schools and these churches. These people are rich. They come from rich, well-to-do families. I'm more scared of them than I am walking down an inner city street any day.
Statistically, there's more people killed with hammers and fists and feet than people with assault weapons. That's a statistic.
Right.
So you want to outlaw hammers and people's hands and feet? You want to cut people's hands off so they stop doing bad things? That's where it all starts.
Yeah, true.
In their minds. You want to give them lobotomies because that's where it starts in their mind. You want to outlaw criminal thought?
No.
You know, people have freedom.
You just you just want to give them nutrition so that their brains can develop and know right from wrong. And that's what I've been saying. That's why I own a nutrition business. And that's what I tell everybody, is that everything starts, and that was a part of the debate, everything starts with what you put in your body, what goes in your it goes in and comes out. You are what you eat.
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
Stop outlawing
real
growing food because of from zoning laws, so we have more nutrition available. Absolutely.
Exactly. What you put in your body is 100% of what you are. And if you put dog food, and you're eating dog food every day, if you eat anything from the dollar store or 99 cents or anything from McDonald's or anything, all of that is garbage. It's garbage. All the white processed bread, the white flours, the white rice, the pasteurized milk, all of that is no nutrition, and in fact, it's harmful to you in that it's not giving you anything but empty calories. And then you're talking about a food, food groups and pack. I don't need anything in a package, a bottle, or a can, because all if you can't pronounce it, it's man-made and it's not meant for human consumption. And all of us are, you know, all of you folks are obese and tired and a burden on society because you're causing medical problems. We're talking about prescription pills. Nobody should be taking prescription drugs. They never took prescription drugs before they made their own herbs. This is wrong. America's wrong. The world is going wrong. And people can do something about it, but they don't want to because they're lazy, and now they're stupid. They can't think for themselves. They really are. Everybody, a lot of people around should be with Jane's little dog just sitting around agitating, making Jane go crazy because she's got to leave the show because she's got to take care of people who don't know what they're doing, pooping in their pants.
Because I worked 84 hours overtime this pay period. I worked 80 hours straight time and 84 hours overtime.
Right, and you should be rich. Anybody in their right
mind
who works that much.
I am rich. I will be rich on Thursday, but I asked John to send me $5 to my new PayPal account.
Yeah, well, then you'll be rich and you can travel the world. So I'll see you in the middle of August.
I was going to tell you, I want my white reparations. I want $30 for the radio show, since you think the world is fucked. I want my white brother, white sister reparations.
You'll get them, because women deserve reparations.
I want the title as being your second wife, and whatever benefits that entails.
You already are.
What, Don?
But I said you already are. The bottom line is you know you have to.
Let you guys close the show. It's cutting off in 10 minutes. Okay.
All right. All
Jane.
Right. Well,
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say there's a lot going on.
Well, who do you think's going to who do you think's going to end up on top after all these debates?
Well, my lady is coming on tomorrow, because she's in her platform. She's got all of these a lot of these issues covered, and she's been doing them all her life, and I might just go work for her after the start of the year, but I think Kamala Harris has all the points that can be covered. She has, you know, her being a lawyer and a prosecutor, and she is a woman, mother, minority. I don't even know what else that anybody was blunt. She's smart.
Her
skin's
pretty light. Do you have an issue with that?
Beg pardon?
I mean, her skin's pretty light. I thought you wouldn't approve of that.
Yeah, but she won't be mistaken for a white lady, Wade. Nobody will ever mistake her for being white.
But it mattered how much melanin people had.
She came up strong on Biden after the first debate, and it seemed like there's a little slippage. Do you think that's fake polls, or do you think those are, the numbers are realistic? Because it shows something like she was down to 13 or 14%.
But the polls right now don't matter. There are going to be so many things that are going to change in the next 16 months. So there's not going to be a need for us to pay attention to the polls right now. And I'm a pollster. That's what I do for a living, but especially right now. So what I'm saying is that don't worry about the polls themselves. The polls will change, and they will reflect who is going to be on top right before the primary vote. Elizabeth Warren, I think, made a very good case for herself today. I think she did a very good job. And I don't know how viable a woman candidate is going to be in this particular race. And I think that for the most part, we've got to look for whoever can. And when I say we, I'm talking about those who are of the opinion there should be a change it'll be a man right now. It's going to probably have to be a man in 2020. And I've already told Kamala that she should probably wait until 2024 to make her big splash. But I think with everything going on, I think she might have a good chance in 2020. I might have been wrong on that. So we'll have to see. I asked her and John Fitzgerald Johnson that 2024 might be their time, but John listened to me. He said, yeah, 2024 might be the time he runs for president. But Kamala told me that she was going to go through it now. So we'll just have to see. But I may be working with them. Like I said, Cory Booker has already asked me, Julian Castro. And they know that I'm either a force to be reckoned with, if you will. So this is something that I've got my finger on the pulse and a lot of things going on, and I see the trends, and I think that Kamala really has a good chance to make a big splash. If she doesn't win, she's going to make a real good impression on the electorate and maybe with ready for 2024 when America's able to settle down a little bit. No matter who gets voted in, if we have to retain who we've got, then we've just got to retain who we've got, and that's going to be what we've got to look at. But everything will be ready, settled down by 2024. They'll be termed out, and then it's going to be wide open race.
Do you think there's any chance, a surprise at the last moment, that Michelle Obama would make a surprise attempt to get in?
But she won't do it. She and Oprah they're ladies. They're not going to be able to take the heat. They know it too. They don't want that. So Michelle's not going to jump in, and neither will Oprah. And those two ladies, they have a real good opportunity to win and bring America back. So it's sad to say, thank you very much. It's sad to say that because I would love to see Michelle run, but it's not going to happen this time.
Do you think there's any truth to what's going to happen in the next couple of months or before the end of the year as far as investigations from Horowitz, from Durham, from Barr? Regarding Hillary, the Obama administration, Iran,
no, that's the trade-off. You know, quid pro quo is the political mantra. It's the state. It's the motto. It's the statement. And Barr and Durham are going to hold off because Pelosi is going to hold the Democrats back from impeachment. They're not going to go through impeachment proceedings without Nancy. And Nancy's holding out off for several reasons. And one of them, and I've mentioned this before, is that they're going to see the Republicans more or less destroy themselves. This is a magnificent Academy Award winning movie that's unfolding right before our eyes. Even though a lot of this, you know, the Steele dossier being fake, and a lot of the other stuff that are lies, that have been taken maybe out of context right now for the last 2 years, the quid pro quo is that Barr will not investigate Hillary. Hillary will come out probably in off year. They're going to probably investigate her, but with